Shiva Kanchi Asya Koila Shiva Darshan Prabhave Vaishnava Koila Sabha Sarvagan. Arriving at Shiva Kanchi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the deity of Lord Shiva. By his influence, he converted all the devotees of Lord Shiva into Vaishnavas. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This Shiva Kanchi is also known as Kanabhiram, or the Benares of southern India. In Shiva Kanchi, there are hundreds of symbolic representations of Lord Shiva, as well as a temple that is supposed to be very, very old. Vishnu Kanchi Asi Dekila Lakshmi Narayan Pranama Kaniya Koila Bahuta Stavan. The Lord then visited a holy place known as Vishnu Kanchi. He saw there Lakshmi Narayan deities, and he offered his respects and many prayers to please them. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vishnu Kanchi is situated about 5 miles away from Kanchibiram. It is here that Lord Varadraj, another form of Lord Vishnu, resides. There is also a big lake known as Ananta Sarovar. Prema Veshi Nritya Gita Bahuta Korila Dina Dui Nahi Loke Krishna Bhakta Koila. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at Vishnu Kanchi for 2 days, he danced and performed kirtan in ecstasy. When all the people saw him, they were converted into devotees of Lord Krishna. Could everyone hear? Is everyone comfortable? It is only by the causeless infinite mercy of our beloved Guru Maharaj, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and our most merciful previous acharyas, that today we are blessed with the benediction of being in this eternally holy place, Kanchipuram. In the Sri Sampradaya, there are 3 most holy and important deities: Ranganath in Sri Rangam, Varadraj in Kanchipuram, and Balaji in Tirupati. In the histories of the Alvars, there are profuse prayers glorifying these forms of the Lord. Especially in the life of Sripad Ramanujacharya, the more we dive deeply into these most illuminating pastimes, the more our hearts overflood with gratitude to have the opportunity to be here in this holy place and have the darshan of the Lord in this form. Historically, in the Satya Yuga, Lord Brahma wanted to have the darshan of Lord Narayan and worship him with love and devotion. He performed penance for this purpose, and the Lord appeared in the form of the forest of Naimasharanya. But Brahma wanted to see the personal form of the Lord. So he carried on with his tapasya. In reciprocation, the Lord appeared in the form of water, the holy place Pushkar. But still, Brahma wanted to see the form of the Lord, the original, transcendental form of the Lord. This is not something easy to achieve. Brahma was told that he would have to perform 1,000 Ashwamedha yajnas in order to receive this benediction. But Lord Brahma, he pleaded, he begged. This will take a very long time, and it's very difficult. So he was given a benediction. Go to Kanchipuram, where any spiritual act of devotion is multiplied by 1,000 times over other places. If there you do one Ashwamedha yajna, you will have the darshan of Lord Narayan. Lord Brahma came here. He invited Saraswati Devi, his consort, but for inconceivable pastimes regarding the Lord's pastimes, she was not accessible. So he began the yajna. And like any yajna, impediments will come. It is the mercy of the Lord. In the age of Kali, there was only one yajna that is recommended in the Vedas to achieve the ultimate goal of life. It is not the fire yajna. It is the yajna of the chanting of the holy names. In fact, Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, he had the high priests amongst the Brijavasis to perform days and days of yajnas. And in the meanwhile, the devotees were off to the side doing Nam Sankirtan. And Prabhupada writes in purport that the real installation that invited the deities to come was the sincere devotional chanting of the holy names of the devotees. Krishna Varnam Tvisakrishnam Sango Banga Shabarashnam Yagyai Sankirtanaya Pajaya Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. In this age of Kali, the Yuga avatar appears to teach the Yuga Dharma. Harinam Sankirtan. But we all have experience that when we perform Nam Sankirtan, do our japa, many impediments will come to try to stop our progress. Do any of you have that experience?
No.
Impediments come from within, impediments come from without. But those impediments are coming by the will of the Lord. Because in the face of those impediments, we either have to perish remain lukewarm neophytes, or we have to surrender. There's no other alternative. We have to take shelter. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told his devotees that obstacles are the servants of the Lord. Obstacles on the path of devotion are necessary because human nature is to be complacent. Human nature is to be ritualistic. Even in spiritual life, it is a strong tendency, and none of us are exempt. We all have this human nature, that we take sacred things to be ordinary. And even when we perform our religious duties, they become routine, they become ritualistic. We chant the names of the Lord just to get the number done without really taking shelter. We come before the deity in a lackadaisic way. Vipadashantu tashashvatatra tatra jagat guru. This was Kunti Devi's prayer. That let calamities, let unbearable obstacles come in my life, because then I have no other alternative but to really take shelter of you in great need. So, when everything's going very nicely, it is an opportunity to sincerely surrender. But when things go against the grain of our plan or expectations, when there's crisis, disaster, great impediments, a sincere devotee does not lose faith, does not lose enthusiasm. A sincere devotee understands this is a benediction. Now I have no alternative but to take shelter, to surrender. And factually, that is what bhakti is about, taking shelter. I am not the doer. Krishna is the doer. To acknowledge that fact is very difficult for a conditioned soul. We can do it verbally and mentally, but from the heart, our tendency is to complain. Our tendency is to find fault in others. Our tendency is to blame either the environment or people around us for the inadequacies we have. Yes, you can complain. And you can convince the whole world of the truth that justifies your dilemma. But there is a problem. You make zero spiritual advancement by doing so. Why should we try to convince people of this world how we're right and how the difficulties I'm going through are not my fault? We get nowhere. This was spoken by Lord Brahma. He knows. When difficulties come, we have to, with folded palms, thank God, thank Krishna. Now, for difficulties to actually be difficulties, it cannot be the difficulties that we select. So, Krishna, I will surrender to you with this difficulty or that difficulty. I have a whole list of difficulties in which will help me surrender. But the problem is this. If it's on your list, it's not really a difficulty. The real difficulties are things that come that really we don't want, really we didn't expect, or even if we did expect it, it was what we were praying not to happen. Getting stripped naked in the assembly of Kurus was not on Draupadi's list. But it was worse than death. And she took shelter of Krishna. Being bereft of all of his wealth, his reputation, being rejected by his family members and all of his friends, was not on the list of the Avanti Brahman. But it was just the medicine that the doctor ordered for him to surrender to Krishna wholeheartedly and follow in the footsteps of the great souls. So today it is very hot in this very beautiful mandap, and there is not much circulation. Are any of you suffering? This might not be what you traveled all across the world for, to come to South India, to be under the cool ocean breezes, under the palm trees. But it is a perfect arrangement to take shelter of hearing the glories of the Lord. So many obstacles came in Lord Brahma's execution of his yajna. First, a great river came, massive river, that was just going to wash away the entire yajnashala. But then Brahma took shelter of the Lord, and he appeared as Vega Setu. The Lord appeared as a deity sleeping on Anantashesha. And he was like a dam that stopped the flow of the river. Begavati River. And then demons created complete darkness. How do you perform yajna in complete darkness? Lord Brahma took shelter of the Lord, and the Lord appeared in another form, Deepa Prakash, and created wonderful light. Then the demon sent a ferocious beast, Saraba, and the Lord appeared with 8 arms and killed the demon who they were sent and the demons who sent them in the form of Ashtabhuja. And then all the other demons were just gathered around, just harassing Brahma, trying to do everything possible to stop this yajna. So Lord Narasingadev appeared on the call of Brahma. So there are self-manifested deities of all of these forms of the Lord here in Kanchipuram. In fact, Lord Narasingadev is just underneath the deity of Bharadraj. And with Krishna's grace, we will visit some of these temples. But most importantly, Brahma performed his yajna. And at the successful conclusion of the yajna, in which he prayed with pure devotion for Lord Vishnu to appear. Because please understand, it is not just the ritual of the yajna that invokes the presence of the Lord. It is the feeling, the intention in which it is being offered. That is why yajnas by Brahmins who really don't care anything about you, are just doing it for money, the effect is very minimal.
But Brahmins who are performing in a spirit of compassion to help you, who are doing it with great faith and devotion, their offerings are very pleasingly accepted by the Lord. Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna does not accept what you offer him. Krishna accepts the purpose in which something is offered. Krishna accepts the intention of your heart. And therefore it is very important to have very pure-hearted priests and very pure-hearted pujaris. Because the intentions and the purpose and the purity of their offerings is very much what the Lord is accepting. So Lord Brahma completed his yajna, and from the fire came a magnificent vimana. And within that vimana was the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his beautiful forearm form. And because he came to the world to be the king of all bestowers of blessings, his name is Varadraj. And it is this Varadraj Swami who is the predominating deity of Vishnu Kanshi. And everyone, please be sure you do go for the darshan and offer your prayers of love and devotion. Because Varadraj will bestow blessings upon us. And what should we ask for? We should not ask the absolute truth for mundane things of this world. We should ask the absolute truth, Sri Varadraj, for the highest blessing. The blessing of eternal service to his devotees. The blessing of pure unalloyed love, unconditional in all circumstances. So from that time of Satya Yuga, Varadraj was one of the most prominent deities on earth worshipped by great acharyas. Now I'd like to speak something about some of the great acharyas that had such an impact in the world and in our lives. Especially Sri Prad Ramanuja Acharya. Sri Ramanuja Acharya resided here in Kanchipuram and daily worshipped Sri Varadraj. Before attempting to describe the life of Sri Ramanuja Acharya, we will speak briefly about some of the well-known incidents in the life of his Guru Maharaj, Sri Jamunacharya. Srila Prabhupada oftentimes quotes beautiful slokas from the prayers of Jamunacharya. One quote is, "I was so much attached to enjoying the pleasures of this world." And the highest pleasure of this world is the pleasure of sexual relation. But after tasting the sweetness of your loving devotional service, Krishna, when I think of such pleasures, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought. Such an amazing realization. What the whole world is mad after, making so many arrangements to achieve and protect, He's spitting in disgust at the thought of it. So how he came to this realization, we'd like to speak some words. There was a very great saint of the name Nakamuni. Very learned scholar, very pure heart. Born in a very esteemed Brahmin family. Nakamuni was not only a scholar and a devotee, but he also practiced mystic yoga and has various siddhis. His son was Ishwara Muni. Ishwara Muni was married. Together the family went on a pilgrimage. They especially went to the northern provinces and visited Vrindavan. There they saw the 12 forests, Gokul, Mahavan, Kadiravan, Bahulavan, Kamyavan, Vrindavan, Bandiravan, Badravan, like that, Talavan, Kumudavan, Lohavan, and they did parikram of Govardhan. And especially, they took their baths and worshipped the holy river Jamuna. When they returned to Madurai, which was their residence, Ishwara Muni had a son. And in glorification of the Jamuna River, they named him Jamunacharya. But when he was just a small child, his father died. And his grandfather, Nakamuni, he could understand the temporary suffering condition of this world. So he left everything and accepted sannyas, totally renounced the world, and simply immersed himself in bhakti to Lord Narayan. And also made several disciples, preaching the glories of the Lord. In fact, he was the first person to make available some of the writings of the great Alwars, who were his predecessors. So Jamuna lived in poverty, being taken care of by his mother and grandmother. But he had such extraordinary good qualities. And he was so eager to learn about Krishna. When he was 5 years old, he was sent to the ashram of Basyacharya. He became favorite student of Basyacharya. When he was only 12 years old, some disciples of the great Pandit Kolahala came to the ashram. Now this Kolahala was a very, very powerful scholar. He was a Digvijay Pandit. And because of his scholarship, the king of the Pandya dynasty became very, very much obliged to him. And thus the king made him the court scholar and made a decree, which means a law, that anyone who is defeated in debate by Kolahala must every year pay tax to him. So these students came before Jamunacharya and they said, "Where is your guru?" So Guru Maharaj is not here. He went out. I'm the only one here. Said, who are you? So you don't know who we are? Audacity? You do not know who we are? We are the disciples of the great Kolahala, the greatest scholar in all the universe, who has defeated all men in all directions. Even the king is like a puppet on the strings of the will of Kolahala. And anyone he defeats in debate must pay taxes to him, or according to the king, that person will be punished with death. Your teacher, Bhasyacharya, has been defeated by our great, magnanimous, all-powerful guru. Therefore, he must pay tax. And last several years, he has given no tax. What is he, crazy? Does he know the result of this? Either he pays tax or he dies. Jamunacharya, only 12-year-old boy, he looked at them very gravely. He said, your guru is an ignorant fool. How do I know this? If he trains his disciples to be like you, filled with pride, arrogance, and disrespect, then all I could say is your guru is an ignorant fool. And it is not even worth the time. Why should my guru waste time with such a fool as your guru? I happen to be his youngest and lowest student. I challenge Kolahala to a debate. Let us see him face me. His disciples were shocked with his audacity. They were speechless. Nonsense. He will die. They didn't know what to say. So they went back and reported this to Kolahala. Kolahala laughed. A 12-year-old boy is challenging me to a debate? He told the king. The king was laughing. But still, you have to honor a challenge. That is the Brahminical way. So the king sent a letter to Jamunacharya and said, yes, we accept that you will debate. So Jamunacharya wrote back. He said, this is a very, very highly serious debate in your court, so you should send the royal palanquin. And you should send Brahmins singing mantras and military guards and everything to bring me on procession to your court. So the king agreed. And meanwhile, the whole town of Madurai was just amazed with this. It was unbelievable. The majority of the people were thinking that this little boy is going to be crushed in a matter of seconds before Kolahala. But there were many Brahmins who were already defeated by him, and they were praying. They were praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, please empower this boy to crush the pride of Kolahala into fine powder. So little Yamuna was on the palanquin coming, very innocent. A very small body, very innocent, very sweet looking. And the king saw and turned to his queen. He said, just like a cat devours a mouse, Kolahala is going to defeat this little boy. He said it with great pride. And the queen replied, just as a small spark burns a large mountain of cloth to ashes, this little boy is going to destroy the pride of Kolahala. Kolahala heard her say this. And in a sarcastic voice, he turned to the queen and said, Alabandara? Which means, is this the person that's going to conquer me? And the queen looked at him and said, Alabandara. So they faced each other. Everyone was intensely watching. It was the match of all matches. Forget your cricket matches. This was a real match of great souls. So Kolahala began to present various difficult arguments. But little Yamuna easily answered them. Now when Bhashyacharya heard that his little, youngest 12-year-old student is going to debate Kolahala, who totally defeated him, he was very worried. But Yamunacharya said, no, Guru Maharaj, don't fear at all. By your mercy, I will defeat him. So Yamunacharya answered every question. Every challenge of Kolahala, Yamunacharya effortlessly responded perfectly according to Shastra and good logic. And went on and on and on. The questions were getting more and more difficult, but Yamunacharya just kept answering them. And finally, Yamuna looked at him and said, why are you asking me such easy questions? You're not giving me any difficult questions. Kolahala was asking the most difficult questions he could possibly think of. But Yamuna said, why are you asking me such easy questions? It's just because I'm such a small boy? Do you think because I'm small that makes me an inferior scholar to you? If that's your logic, then a water buffalo is a better scholar than you. Kolahala was dumbfounded. He said, then you ask me questions. And little Yamuna, he said, I have three propositions that I will present to you. And I want you to defeat the propositions that I present. Kolahala said, you speak and I will defeat whatever you say. Said, first proposition, that Kolahala, your mother is not a barren woman. First time in his life, Kolahala did not have an answer. How could he prove she's a barren woman? If she was a barren woman, he would not be alive to talk about it. He was dumbfounded. People started to laugh. He became very embarrassed. Yamunacharya said, oh, you cannot answer that question? Please defeat my second proposition. That the king is a supremely righteous man. And he is filled of piety and religion. The king is standing right there on his throne. If he were to start speaking bad things about the king, he would be dead. He was absolutely silent. The queen was watching. Oh, you cannot answer the second? Well, defeat my third proposition. That the queen is chaste and faithful to her husband, just like Savitri. At that point, Kolahala exploded with anger. You are making such upper odds. You are offending. How could anyone, if I tried to prove that the queen is not a chaste woman or that the king is not a pious man, I will be killed. You should be killed for bringing up such nonsense, offensive arguments. You must die unless you can answer these questions. Answer or die. And if you offend the king or queen, your life is finished. So there was the audience. The supporters of Kolahala. They were saying, yes, yes, he should answer these questions or die. But all the Brahmins who really wanted Yamunacharya to win, they were saying, that was not part of the arrangement. Nowhere was this clause that he had to answer his own questions. The fact is that Kolahala could not answer. He's lost the debate. Why don't you admit it? Why are you adding this nonsense? And then there was a big fight between the crowd. But Yamunacharya said, everyone be quiet. Shanti. I will answer my questions. I will defeat these three proposals. There was pin drop silence. First proposal. Oh dear Kolahala, that your mother is not a barren woman. According to Manu Samhita, a woman who only has one child is considered a barren woman. And because you are the only son, your mother is declared by Shastra a barren woman. Second proposal, that the king of the Pandya dynasty is a most righteous and pious man. But according to Manu Samhita, the king has to accept 1/6 of all the pious activities of everyone in the kingdom, and also must accept 1/6 of the impious, sinful activities of all of the kingdom. And because it is Kali Yuga and people are more sinful than pious, therefore, although the king in his personal life is compassionate, moral, righteous, he's the embodiment of piety. Out of his love and sacrifice for all the living beings, he's accepting 1/6 of the sins, and therefore, he is not pious. And the third proposition, I asked you to defeat this, that the queen is faithful and chaste only for her husband. We all know that this queen is the embodiment of all virtues. She is perfectly pure in her heart. She loves and serves her husband with such faithfulness. She's the very embodiment of chastity. However, according to Brahma Samhita, the king represents the seven prominent demigods: Agni, Varuna, Kubera, Yamaraj, Indra, Vayu. And therefore, in her service to the king, she's actually serving seven men simultaneously. When he said that, the queen leaped up from her throne with tears in her eyes and cried out, "Alabandhara! You have conquered Kolahala." And there was a great roar of applause by everyone in the audience. The king jumped up from his throne, put a garland on little Yamuna, and embraced him. And Kolahala, all of his false pride became like ashes in the presence of the fire of Jamunacharya's purity. Now the king and queen, they made a wager or a bet before the contest. The queen said, if Kolahala defeats little Jamuna, then I will become the servant of the servant of your maidservants. And the king said, oh, well, if little Jamuna defeats Kolahala, the great scholar, then I will give Jamuna half my kingdom. So there was a great festival. And in the conclusion, the king of Pandya offered half of his kingdom to little Jamuna. Here he was, 12 years old, now king of vast provinces. And when neighboring kingdoms heard that there was just an inexperienced 12-year-old boy in charge, they started sending their armies to invade and plunder him and conquer him. But Jamuna was so intelligent that he just picked up the military and political systems very quickly and organized his troops and defeated everyone that came. Not only did he defeat all aggressors, but he was sending his armies to expand his kingdom. And years went by. He was a very, very powerful and great king. But one problem is that he was totally distracted from his spiritual practices. So much worried about the domestic social welfare of the citizens and taxations and spies and armies for protection and armies for conquering. Very difficult. Years went by. He never even picked up his Bhagavad Gita or any scriptures. Meanwhile, Natha Muni was on his deathbed. He was very old. He had renounced everything. He called his most intimate and beloved disciple. Name was Ram Mishra. He said, all my desires have been fulfilled in life, except one, my grandson, Yamuna. He's so much attached to his kingdom. And he's so much attached to all the pleasures of his kingdom and all the immense sense gratification that's come with it. He has forgotten his spiritual heritage. Now I'm going to die, and there's nothing I can do to help him except pray. But I give you this instruction. Make your life and soul to bring Yamuna, the king, back to the path of pure, unalloyed devotional service. So Ram Mishra came to Madurai, and he went to the palace. And there were so many kings of other provinces and so many wealthy people and so many ministers and Brahmins coming to meet him. He waited for days. He was just a very unknown, unimportant person. He may never get an audience with the king. So he made a plan because he knew the science of Ayurveda. There was a particular type of spinach. And that spinach was not only very delicious, but it brought out the good qualities in a person. It made them healthy and quite effulgent and helped them to think very clearly. So Ram Mishra, he picked this spinach, which was called Tuduvalai, and he brought it to the cook in the kitchen and said, I am just an unknown Brahmin, but out of my great love and devotion to the king, the great Yamuna, I'm offering this. Please prepare it for him. It will be good for his health and he will like it very much. From the love of my heart, I offer. So he spoke so sincerely that the king prepared this Tuduvalai. And every day the king was getting it. And he became very attached. But Ram Mishra had a plan. One day he did not come to the back door of the kitchen to deliver the spinach, which actually just grew wild. So that day, Yamunacharya, he called for the cook. He said, where is the spinach? Every day you're serving it to me. I like it very much. Why you didn't offer it today? He said, there is a Brahmin that comes to bring it every day. He doesn't ask any money. No one is like this. Everyone charges. He doesn't ask any money. Even so many days and weeks he's giving. And when I offer him something in return, he said, no, no. It is because of my great love for the king that I am bringing this for his good health. The king was very moved by this. He said, next time that Brahmin comes, bring him in to see me. I want to meet him. The next day, Ram Mishra came with the spinach and said, King Yamuna wants to meet you. So he went in, and there was a wonderful greeting, an exchange of affection. Ram Mishra said, I have come with an important message for you. I am a disciple of your grandfather, Sri Natha Muni. And he has left a great treasure that is hidden, and he wants me to show you where it is. Yamunacharya was in the middle of battling with so many people who were attacking him. And to have proper efficiency in war, you need a lot of wealth. So that's just what he needed, is a treasure. He said, yes, my grandfather has left me a treasure. Bring me to that treasure. Ram Misha sent all the cooks away. He said, I want to tell you about this alone. This treasure is guarded by 7 gates. And it's surrounded by 2 rivers. And it's very much diligently guarded by a many-headed serpent. Every 12 years, a yaksha comes just to check, to make sure it's in good condition. And the only way to approach it is by the chanting of mantra. I will take you to this treasure, but you must come all alone with me. So Yamunacharya, he dispatched his duties to his senior leaders, and he left alone with Ram Mishra. They walked for many, many miles. And when the noontime came and the sun was burning hot, they sat under a tree. And Ram Mishra recited the entire Bhagavad Gita. Every day he did like this. When they would sit down to rest in the noon, he would recite Sri Bhagavad Gita. It was the first time Yamunacharya had heard Bhagavad Gita since he was a small boy of 12 years old. It transformed his heart. He fell at the feet of Ram Mishra and said, you are awakening the spiritual essence within my being that I have so long forgotten. Thank you, thank you. Ram Mishra said, why don't we just stay here for many days and hear Sri Bhagavad Gita? So Ram Mishra, according to how he heard from Natha Muni, was describing the beautiful passages of Sri Gita. And Yamunacharya, just by hearing the words of Lord Sri Krishna, was becoming detached from material life and attached to the loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And finally, when Ram Mishra recited the 8th verse of the 12th chapter of Gita, where Krishna says that one should fix one's consciousness on me, one should fix one's mind and intelligence on me alone, and then I will bring you back to my abode. Yamunacharya began to weep and cry. Besides himself, in ecstasy, he fell at the feet of Ram Mishra and said, I'll never go back to my kingdom. My life will only be for the loving service of Krishna. In fact, I do not even want the treasure that my grandfather has left for me. I will remain with you in the renounced order of life, worshipping Lord Krishna. Ram Mishra said, but it is my duty to bring you to the treasure that your grandfather has left. So they walked on, and they went through 7 gates in the holy Kshetra of Sri Ranga, which is surrounded on 2 sides by the Kaveri River. And they went into the altar, and there they saw Anantashesha, who was guarding the Lord, protecting the Lord. And it is said that every 12 years, Vibhishan, the Yaksha, comes to do puja for the deity. And by chanting the mantra of the holy name, Yamunacharya was given darshan of Sri Ranganath Swami. Ram Mishra said, this was the only treasure of your grandfather's life. And it was his prayer that you received this treasure.
So Yamunacharya gave the majority of his kingdom to other Pandya kings. And he also took a part of his kingdom, specifically put it in the name of Ranganath, for all of the wealth would be used to serve Sri Ranganath Swami in Sri Ranga.
And he lived in the simplest way as a renunciate.